NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
I'm doing okay this week. I've got a slightly sore throat, so I'm thinking of taking the week off to really rest up for the playoff podcast.
Yeah, that's good. Then I can start working your schedule, which is basically 19 hours a day. So looking forward to that. Awesome.
Well, I want to do my best San Antonio Spurs Greg Popovich podcast. Get ready for the playoffs.
That's true. We should actually be resting our stars, so that's not exactly a bad idea. All right, well, let's get into last night's games here. We had the Bulls, 118-111 in overtime over the Knicks, snapping New York's 13-game winning streak. Kind of a weird game in terms of the fact that Knicks had no really bigs in their lineup. They started Chris Copeland, didn't have Tyson Chandler or Kenyon Martin due to injury. Bulls were without Joakim Noah, so it was sort of a small ball game to an extent. And when you talk about small ball, you definitely talk about Nate Robinson, who went nuts for 35 points off the bench, about 12 discount double checks when he's hitting those three-point shots. Bulls always play tough, man. They got that defensive identity. Of course, obviously, giving up 111 points, it's not a super defensive game, but they can just beat you in a variety of ways. They play really hard. You know, they took down the Heat when the Heat had that big winning streak. We've been saying this for a while, but really nobody wants to face this Bulls team in the playoffs, do they?
No, I mean, look, if your choice, if you know you're the Nets and you're like, I can get the Bulls or the Hawks, it ain't much of a call. You know, it's just not much of a call. You would much rather face the Hawks, even with Horford and Josh Smith, and you know, there's talent on that roster, but the Bulls are going to grind you, and it's the same problem you run into with Memphis in the West. It doesn't matter who they're playing; they are going to be a tough out. Just because they're physical and they defend and they're, you know, with Noah back and, you know, right now Noah and Dang and Gibson are all banged up. When they get everybody back, they've got some size, they've got some athleticism. They're not going to win a title. They probably don't even get out of the first round, but they're not going to go quietly. And then they're going to win a game or two in the playoffs just like they did last night because, you know, you can live by the Nate and die by the Nate.
Yeah.
Some days he's hot.
Yeah, you know, he's been really amazing this season. You know, there's been times where he takes some horrific shots, and you know that Tom Thibodeau wants nothing to do with, you know, riding Nate Robinson into the playoffs, right? He'd much rather have his team healthy. You know, like you said, you live by him and die by him. But when he's on and when he's hitting shots and when he's creating offense, he can really carry you. I think what you said is true, though. You're looking at the Bulls definitely getting a couple wins in the playoffs. I'm not so sure that they, you know, we should be ruling them out in terms of winning a first-round series. They're either going to be playing the Nets in a 4-5 matchup or the Pacers in a 3-6. We all like to talk about how dangerous the Pacers are, but, you know, the Bulls could definitely beat the Pacers in a 7-game series. I mean, I'm not really threatened or super scared by Indiana. What are your thoughts on the Pacers' prospects?
Yeah, the Pacers-Bulls theory is the series, like first team to 70 wins every game.
Right.
That would be a defensive grinding game. I like the Pacers a little more just because I think with George Hill, with Paul George, they've got some identity. They really have to, I mean, their playoff hopes hinge not only on playing good defense, which has been spotty for them lately, actually, but also, I mean, they have to get a lot of offense out of Roy Hibbert. They have to get those easy buckets in the paint from him. If he's struggling, they're in trouble. They also have David West. We tend to overlook, but that guy's just a rock-solid four who can – one of the best pick-and-pop bigs in the league. So I like them a little more. I think they have a few more weapons, but that – you know, you're right. The Bulls are capable of – especially, honestly, like I'm just not as sold on the Nets as a lot of people. They don't defend. They don't do a lot of things. I think that that's a very beatable team in the first round. They have Deron Williams. Yes, they have Brooke Lopez. But that's a team that doesn't seem to have an identity to me. And I think the Bulls could grind them and get a series win there.
Yeah, I could see that. The only, you know, like you said, Deron Williams, you mentioned him. He's been playing a lot better lately. He's clearly getting healthy at the right time. So if he started to take over games, he's better offensively than anybody that Chicago has. And you know, they might struggle to defend him if he's putting up games like he did against Boston the other night. You know, we'll see. It's going to definitely be interesting. That's one of those series. There's a ton of them, actually. Almost every first-round series is going to be pretty interesting to watch. You know, Friday morning as we're recording this, and, you know, yet another Derrick Rose report/update. Now the report is that he's not going to come back, you know, during the playoffs. You don't expect him back. He's now basically on target for training camp. No surprise at this point, but do you think the Chicago could have handled the Derrick Rose situation any differently to sort of avoid all these semi-daily non-updates?
Yeah, I think that that's the one thing that they would like to change, that the Bulls would, you know, and probably, frankly, in Derrick Rose's camp, they'd like to change, is that this became an ongoing running story rather than just saying, you know, a while ago, I don't think I'm coming back this season. I'll let you know if I change my mind, but I'm out. I think it would have been just, it would have killed the storyline. It probably would have been better for the team psyche, I think, in the locker room, just to know what they did or didn't have going into the playoffs. At this point, this is him not coming back is a complete non-surprise, because you can't, I mean, you need 10 games for him to shake the rust off, for them to adjust their rotations and adjust to playing different roles in different minutes. I mean, playing with Derrick Rose is now very different for all those players. Just everything would have changed, and you can't just now, with, you know, 3 games left in the season, throw him out there and say, hey, he's back. We're going to be, you'll be out more quickly, honestly, in the playoffs. You would throw the whole rhythm of the team off at this point.
Yeah, from a chemistry standpoint, that would be tough. And, you know, a lot of teams this season, it seemed like more than seasons past, they constantly said no timetable for return when asked about their star players' injuries. And then when they did return, whether it was ahead of schedule or right on schedule, it was a huge surprise that day. We saw that with Kevin Love earlier this season when he came back. It was out of nowhere. Everyone's like, whoa, Kevin Love's playing tonight. They just announced it the day he was playing, but they maintained all along no timetable for the return. I think if you set that expectation, you know, maybe a lesson for other teams moving forward, if you set the expectation, there's no timetable, there's no pressure, when he's ready, he's ready, you know, then you can just surprise everybody when the guy's finally ready.
Exactly. And I think for the challenge in the Rose case is also that, you know, Iman Shumpert returned. Other people have returned from surgeries. You know, Meta World Peace was back in like 36 hours. You know, and that just, I think, frustrated Bulls fans who heard he's medically cleared to play. I don't have, like, we've discussed it before. I have no problem with what Derrick Rose is doing.
Sure.
He can take as much time off as he wants, and he shouldn't come back till he's ready and he's confident. And again, I have no issue with this. I just think they could have handled the story a little better.
All right. And then quickly over on the Knicks side, looks like they ended up signing Solomon Jones on Friday morning. We got that news. A couple days ago, it looks like they were in line to sign James Singleton, which was of interest to me personally since I randomly played pickup ball with the guy about 6 years ago, but that's another story for another time.
You dunked on him.
not quite. But supposedly he couldn't get released from his Chinese team in time, and that was the issue. So they add another big in Solomon Jones, averaged about 15 points, 10 rebounds in China this past season. You think that helps him much? Do you think Jones gets much playing time, or is it just sort of another big body to add on the bench, sort of as an emergency policy for the playoffs?
It's more of a practice body, yeah. It's somebody, you know, it's somebody for the first team to go against, and somebody who you can say, hey, in practice, we need to start, you know, mirroring what the Nets do or what the Hawks do or whoever you're playing. You know, we need to mirror that in practice a little bit. And he's the kind of veteran who can come in and give you some of that, you know, a big body inside. So it's that. I would, outside of seeing 3 minutes at the end of a couple blowout games in the playoffs, I don't see him being on the court much at all.
All right, and then the second game last night, we had OKC going into Golden State, taking care of the Warriors, 116-97. It was actually a close game in the first half, and then third quarter came along, and the Thunder did what the Thunder do, which is put together a big run. It was like a 36-23 third quarter. Kevin Durant finished with a near triple-double. I think he was 2 assists shy, and he probably could have gotten there if the game was closer. He came out with just over 8 minutes to play, and his team leading by over 20 points. You know, kind of saw this game coming from the Warriors' standpoint, right? I mean, they celebrated, you know, rightfully so. They celebrated their playoff clinching victory 2 nights ago, kind of made a big deal. You know, everybody was super happy. I mean, it looked like they won a division title or something. I mean, everybody was, you know, taking pictures. Mark Jackson was like teary-eyed, smiling. I mean, it was a big moment for them. So you kind of, they really don't have anything to play for at this point. The Warriors are locked into a 6 or 7 seed, and the Thunder, you know, they're still playing for that one seed. They had to get this game, and that's, you know, you pretty much saw the end result of that. What are your thoughts of Golden State as we look at their playoff positioning? They're basically, again, locked into that 6 or 7. They're gonna if they finish at the 6, they're going to be facing Denver or the Clippers, and if they finish at the 7, they're looking at either Oklahoma City or San Antonio in the first round.
Yeah, I think you'd like to get the 6 seed in that spot.
Yeah.
Not that the Clippers or some piece of, you know, or Denver are easy, far from it, but they're not Oklahoma City either. Look, this is a first step for a franchise, and I think, you know, I think the Clippers are a little bit in the same boat, although the expectations are different there. For this team, for Golden State, making the playoffs was the goal this year, and they've done it. Like, you know, it's a culture change that has to happen with one of the worst-run professional sport franchises for you know, what they once in the last 19 years they went to playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's so hard to do in the NBA, to miss the playoffs that often, where, you know, more than half the league gets to go. You have to be consistently bad. So this step is huge for them, and I'd like, you know, they should celebrate it. They should enjoy it. They won't go, you know, they won't go quietly in the first round. They've got some guys. Andrew Bogut tweaked his ankle. If he's in, they need him inside to have any real shot in the playoffs for causing a lot of trouble. They need his defense inside. But the fact of the matter is they'll win one game because Curry and Thompson will just rain threes on whoever they end up playing. But just making the playoffs is a step. It's part of changing the culture there. It's part of making things better in the same way, you know, getting a new arena and doing, you know, changing, tweaking the uniforms. Just all this stuff is about changing the culture there. And I think that's the one thing you've got to also give Mark Jackson some serious credit for. I'll admit I was down on him as a coach coming into this. I didn't think that was going to work. He's done a really good job, and he's got them buying in and playing hard. And as you start to turn it around, and now you look at what the next steps are from there for them.
Yeah, I think with Mark Jackson, I mean, you hit it right on the head. A lot of us were skeptical about him coming in because he had zero coaching experience at any level. And when you look at the NBA, you got 30 teams. Putting somebody with zero experience, even though they're a player in the league, even though they play at the point guard position, when you put somebody in with no experience, you're like, is that really one of the 30 best head coaches, you know, that in the profession? So you're always going to question that. But, you know, Jackson has a charisma and an authoritarian sort of personality that just works well with his young players. I mean, Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, those guys buy into whatever Mark Jackson is selling. And he's done a great job, like you said, of changing that culture. And yeah, Golden State's going to be tough in the first round of the playoffs because they have one of the best home court advantages, you know, in the league, and especially in that playoff atmosphere. You start to play a little bit of an up-tempo game. You start to hit some threes. That place is going to be going nuts. And, you know, some team isn't going to be ready for it, and they're going to drop at least one game at Golden State.
I agree. No, I agree. And like I said, this is worth celebrating. This is a great step for them. And then you head into the offseason and say, all right, you know, there are big questions there, starting with, how far can you really go with the Curry Thompson backcourt, or do you know that yet? That said, those are questions for the summer. They're not questions for now. They made the playoffs, and the fans should celebrate and enjoy that experience.
Yeah, and it's actually been Curry Thompson and Jarrett Jack in the backcourt because Mark Jackson likes that three guard lineup. He likes to have Jack on the floor, but you know, there's been a little bit of sort of controversy among fans and analysts that cover that team. About, you know, what's exactly the best way to go about that. But again, you know, we'll see how it shakes out in the playoffs, and either way, it's a great accomplishment for the Warriors. Looking at the bottom of the Western Conference standings, our weekly Lakers playoff update, they're a full game now ahead of the Utah Jazz for the eighth and final playoff spot in the West. Each team has three games left to play, and for the Lakers to get in, they need to stay a full game or better ahead because Utah has the head-to-head tiebreaker. So if they finish with identical records, the Jazz are the ones that will get in. If you look at the schedule of each team remaining, the Lakers have definitely the more difficult schedule, even though all their games at home. They play Golden State tonight, then they play the Spurs, and then they finish up the season against the Rockets. So all playoff teams, you know, we don't know who the Spurs are going to play. We don't know if the Rockets will have anything to play for that final game of the season. On the Jazz side, you know, they play Minnesota twice in the next two games, a home and home. Minnesota's been playing better lately, but honestly, you know, come on. I mean, if the Jazz have any aspirations of getting to the playoffs, they should win both of those games. And then they finish up at Memphis, and who knows what the Grizzlies will need at that point in the season, whether they'll be resting guys or, you know, what's going on with that. It's sort of tough to figure out. What is your take on the eighth playoff spot in the West? Do you think the Lakers end up getting in, or do you think Utah takes it?
Yeah. I mean, I said last week, and I couldn't even articulate why. I just had a feeling the Lakers were going to be able to pull this together, that they were going to find a way to get enough wins. And they seem to be doing. I mean, they control their own destiny now, and I still think they get in. What I should have said is Kobe Bryant won't let them lose.
Yeah, exactly.
That's ultimately what it has come down to. They've had good moments again from Pau Gasol. Dwight Howard has had some good defensive plays, but at the end of the day, Kobe Bryant's going out there and playing 48 minutes on the second night of a back-to-back and dropping 47 points. And, you know, look, if a 24-year-old does that, we're lauding him, let alone a 34-year-old guy, he's been spectacular. And he's not going to let them miss the playoffs. You know, I think the thing the Laker fans have to be saddest about, frankly, is that Oklahoma City keeps winning and they're going to get that top seed in the West, and that is the one team the Lakers did not want to see in the top spot. But I think they're going to do it. I think what they would like to avoid is it coming down to the Rockets on the last night, whether or not the Rockets have anything to play for. Because the Rockets play fast. The Rockets play up-tempo, run-it-down-your-throat basketball with their reserves and their starters, and the Lakers' transition defense has been a mess all season. If they have to play transition defense to make the playoffs on the last night, it could be challenging.
Yeah, that Rockets game is a little bit scary, especially when you talk about James Harden and the way he can just break down the Lakers' defense. You know, you talked about the speed. The Rockets play one of the top paces in the league. They do play fast. I think what you said about Kobe is absolutely right, though. The guy's just been ridiculous, you know, especially the last two games, that fourth quarter against New Orleans, and then the 47 points in Portland. I think his entire statistical line, when you look at points, rebounds, assists, steals, whatever, I think it's been unmatched in NBA history. If you plug in all those numbers on Basketball Reference, no one's ever had that type of game, ever. So, you know, when you talk about Kobe putting up games like that, yeah, he's just basically dragging them into the playoffs. What you said about Oklahoma City is absolutely right. That's a bad matchup for the Lakers. They definitely don't want Russell Westbrook, you know, in the playoffs. That's going to just end horribly. But, you know, I think for the Lakers this season, it's going to be some minor positive. Yes, given the expectations and given the roster at the beginning of the year, is making the playoffs at an 8 seed any big accomplishment? No, of course not. It's a huge disappointment. But if you look at the way the season is shaken out for the Lakers, with all the injuries, with all the drama, with all the nonsense, it's some minor goal achieved, which can be taken as a positive for them, you know, into the offseason. Maybe it helps them retain Dwight Howard, you know, something. It is a positive regardless of what the expectations were to start the season.
Well, I think more than that, they formed sort of an identity. They finally figured out how to play together, how to make this work. Not smoothly yet, not perfectly, but they're getting there. And that is what they build off of for next season. I mean, next season, they need to be back. This is as win-now a team as there is in the league. They have to win now. They have to come back and consider themselves contenders. You know, and we'll see what moves they make in the summer and whether they're going to reach that goal, because it won't be easy. Oklahoma City will be better next year. You know, they are not going to come back worse. They're going to have Westbrook and Durant and Ibaka, who are all under 25, you know, coming back. They will be a better team. So the Lakers have to figure out how to take that next step, or steps in this case. But I think the push to do this is a long-term good for them. It helps start building that for the next season.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. You know, definitely a huge positive. If they can even just get in the playoffs, even if they can just win a game over somebody like the Thunder. You know, again, I know people are going to say, like, what are you talking about, man? This team is stacked. They should have been much better. Yeah, they should have. They had a coaching change. Yeah. They had a ton of injuries, you know. But, again, still a huge positive.
And, by the way, Utah in the summer is going to be really interesting. Like, 9 free agents, including Millsap and Al Jefferson. I mean, this is the last hurrah for this core group in Utah. They will be a very different team next year.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned that, you know, it's very interesting. You know, Ty Corbin has gotten a lot of heat this season, especially when Utah was going through that slide. People were saying, like, oh, he's definitely gone in this offseason. But how often do you see a team with 9 free agents and the coach is actually able to control that and not have everybody just gunning for their individual numbers? I mean, he's done a pretty good job of keeping that team focused, you know, despite that losing stretch that they had. I mean, right now they're still, you know, right there with these last few games in the hunt for the playoffs. So maybe he doesn't get blown out now by the way they finish this season. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's be interesting. I mean, it just seems weird to talk about coaching changes in Utah because, you know, Jerry Sloan coached from, I'm not positive, but I think the Mesozoic era up until 3 years ago. When you're there that long, it's kind of weird. They believe in consistency. They just need to ask themselves, and it's sort of in a sense, the Lakers, I don't think, handled the Mike Brown thing well, but it's sort of the same question. If you're going to make a change because you don't think he's the guy who can start to lead you back and form an identity and rebuild, then better to do it now than later.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, they just have to ask themselves what kind of team they're trying to build, what they do this summer, and then is Corbin the guy who can do that for them, or did he lose this team at points this year? And, you know, that's a long, involved conversation for management and ownership there.
Well, and like you said, it's really going to depend on who they decide to bring back, how many of those free agents, and how much roster turnover. If they end up losing, you know, a third of their roster, they might want to keep the head coach just in place, you know, just for the sake of continuity.
Well, they need to do some, and there certainly needs to be some roster turnover there. They need a point guard. I mean, they need to go get themselves a quality point guard. They need to, you know, with Enes Kanter and Derek Favors on the roster, you can lose Jefferson, keep Millsap, and still have an impressive front line to run out there every night. So, you know, those are two good young players they've got coming off the bench there. So I like what they can do. They should have some cap room. They should be able to build into a nice team again pretty quickly. This shouldn't be a case where they go Phoenix Suns and go way down and come back up.
Yeah, that's been fun this season out here for sure.
Oh, the joys of living in Phoenix, Brett.
Yeah.
Well, all those Suns games in person.
Yeah, there are many, many joys. But yeah, this season hasn't been so great. All right, well, the last thing we wanted to hit on was, you know, something that's been going on in the league for the last couple weeks, and that's the teams that are sort of firmly in playoff position, resting their star players. We've seen the Heat sitting down Dwayne Wade for several games. LeBron's missed some time. Chris Bosh actually finally got a game off the other day. Looks like Friday night against the Celtics, the Heat are going to be back at full strength, but now Boston's resting guys. What do we do about this, if anything? I mean, is it okay for teams to rest their players? You know, like Popovich said earlier in the year, you know, he knows his team. He knows his veteran players. A lot of times they're dealing with, you know, what Shaq used to call knick-knack injuries that, you know, maybe aren't severe enough to keep them out of a game, but, you know, you want to get right for the playoffs if at all possible. At the same time, you got fans buying tickets to go see these guys in person. You know, what, if anything, should the league do about the thing about resting players at this point?
Yeah, I think it ultimately comes back to the big picture thing is it comes back to that the league markets itself as a player-driven, star-driven league.
Yeah.
This isn't, you know, nobody blinks when this happens in Major League Baseball. And even to a degree in the NFL, which really sells teams more than stars, you know, I think if you buy a ticket to go see the 16th New England Patriots game of the year, you pretty much go in knowing you may not see Tom Brady.
Right.
You know, if you do it in Denver, you don't see Manning. Those guys get rest. I think there's some of that, but I think because the NBA is more of a star-driven league, it's more of an issue. And I don't know. It doesn't bother me. The problem is, even if it did bother me, I don't know how you police that because you're going to get – look, Stern fined the Spurs earlier this season. Great. Now, is every team doing that is resting guys? You know, you're talking about KG and Paul Pierce both out for the Celtics Friday night. They announced it a day early. They said, oh, they've got sore ankles. They need a night off. How – that's what teams are going to do if you try to make it illegal to rest guys. They're just going to come up with injuries for them. And at this point in the season, there, like you said with Shaq, there isn't a guy in the league who doesn't have something that could use a day off of rest. So I don't think that there's a way for the league to police this.
Yeah, I think the only thing you can do is if – and we'll pretty much never see it again thanks to that huge fine the Spurs got. But you just can't be so flagrant about it where you're flying your guys home – you know, yeah. Like the morning of shoot around before the game. You just can't do that. But I think, like you said, as long as a team says, hey, this guy has this injury, they're going to be able to rest players. You know, famously, when they used to trade guys off the inactive and the active list, everybody used to have tendonitis, right? That was the code word for, like, we're just sitting this guy down for a couple games.
Exactly. And that's why I don't really have a problem with this. It was going on. It's going to be going on. Guys rest. The other part of that whole, oh, you paid for the ticket, it's the marketing, you know, star-driven league thing is where the NBA really sells its stars and makes its money is the playoffs. That's where the TV partners all get their money back. I mean, the regular season's nice, but the playoffs are where the ratings go up and they can, you know, TNT can finally start to pitch us their new dramedy 14 times a game.
The closer.
I can't wait to see what it is this year. Men at Work. Whatever it's going to be.
Franklin and Bash, man. Come on.
Exactly. So, whatever. I mean, the point is, it's been going on. You've got to get guys right for the playoffs. That is when everybody's tuning in. And that doesn't mean you and I and the other people listening to this podcast who are hardcore basketball fans, by and large. That's when the casual fans come in. That's when your wife starts watching a couple games because she wants to see games. That's when everybody's paying attention, and that's when you have to have your stars healthy. So if you miss some games at the end of the regular season, do have better playoff basketball. It's just not an issue that bothers me.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you hit it exactly on the head there. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure you leave us some comments. Let us know how we're doing. And Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
All right, we'll do some playoffs next week.
Yeah, finally, right?
It's about time.